אפשר להוסיף לכל לתת שבת שואל על ואין כמו ואין
Thank you, Secretary. I propose the name of Honorable Mahasa to share the meeting for us.
Honorable Mahasa has been proposed any second. Honorable Mishak seconded. So, Honorable Mahasa will request you to come up front and continue the meeting. Thank you.
I'd also send an apology for the Deputy Minister that she's hurriedly abroad in the local official business.
Thank you. We have accepted these apologies if they are okay. To move on.
I just move that the apologies are accepted. Thank you, sir.
now we will discuss the adoption of the first term of the policy program. Let me invite the secretary to discuss in that session.
Thank you, Chair. May I draw the attention of the members, honorable members, to the proposed draft program of the portfolio committee of the first term of the calendar year, which is the last quarter of the financial year. So the program started on the 26th of January, which will come to the end of the 22nd of March. In the program, there are areas that has been highlighted, and that means that those are the days in which a committee is not sitting on Wednesday's lordship. Number one. Number two, though we have gone, we are now on the 13th of February, the committee has already undertook the oversight eventually over. And then, unfortunately, the meeting of last week was cancelled due to the availability of the members. And then now we are on the 17th, where we are expecting the briefing and the deliberation on quarter two and quarter three performance report of the department. The reason for bringing the quarter two members might remember that meeting that was issued last year, it didn't end up correctly because the committee was disturbed by some interventions that were taking place by the labor organization. Hence the quarter two will be done again. So we put on the 24th, that's Wednesday next week, the committee of the city will be receiving the developments and the results of the program review by the department. The further attention can be drawn to the strategic plan session that has been planned for the committee since I wanted to welcome the chairman. The committee has said that on the 20th, Friday the 26th and Saturday the 27th, the committee should go for a strategic plan session. Since honorable members can be reminded that since the inception of the committee, the committee has not yet done the strategic plan for 2014 to 2019. And then we'll also be having a meeting on the 2nd of March where we'll be considering and adopting the strategic plan that should have been produced by the 27th, on the 27th of February. Then on Tuesday the 8th, members will see that it's not our slot. The committee has been invited by the Ministry of Telecommunication and Postal Services, which is a follow-up meeting since we remember that we had some interaction with different departments where we were looking at the opportunities for the FMM and co-ops. So telecommunication wants us to have a follow-up meeting on the ICT FMM. And on Wednesday, we'll be considering and adopting the oversight report of the Limpopo. Then on Tuesday, the 15th, the committee will expect to receive the briefing on the strategic and annual performance of the department, since we'll be starting preparing for the budget vote. According to the parliamentary program, on the 10th, the strategic plans of all the departments will be tabled, so then start deliberating on them on the 15th of March. And then on the 15th of March, we'll also be receiving the briefing on the strategic annual performance of our entities or agencies, which is FIFA and FIDA. Chairperson, I will propose that the House adopt the program.
items everywhere on the program. The council had received inviting that adopt the program. Let me ask you to hear that task, the adoption of the program. There is a problem put before you. Can we have a comment? Can we have a mover for the adoption of the program? Seconder? As outlined by the secretary. I'm looking at members particularly. Our honorable hands.
Yeah, I propose the adoption of the program.
Thanks, honorable chance. Seconder? So with that item done, we now go to the next item, which is the deliberations on the department. Yeah, let me at this instance ask the chairperson to take over and thanks for having made it to be here at this. You have the car breakdown.
Thank you very much. My apologies for arriving late. On item number, the second quarter performance report of the cabinet of North Central Development. Members will remember that on the day on which this report was presented, there was an industrial action here in Simon. When we were just about to start the discussion, the committee meeting was then at a distance, but then we had to address the action. What I would then, the process that we are then going to follow today is that we are going to allow the department to base us on that. Not in a much detailed manner, but just to recap so that we can refresh our mind about that presentation. We will not engage into discussion of the second quarter report. We will immediately after that get the third quarter report. And the reason for that is that it may be possible that the questions that were going to arise on the third quarter report are actually addressed in the third quarter report. So to save time, let us take both of the reports. We are recapping on the second quarter report, and then we are retaining a detailed briefing on the third quarter report. And then we discuss both for the examiner. That's how we are going to be approaching the presentation. May I then invite the DJ to lead the presentation.
Yes, thank you very much.
Good morning.
Thank you, good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The second quarter report, I will go straight to slide number 4. Chair, which provides a summary and reporting that there are 26 performance indicators for the 2015-16 financial year. And there were 31 milestones which we set to achieve in quarter two. We delivered 58% of the milestones and underachieved 58%, 18 of the 31, 58%, and underachieved on 13 of them, or 41%. We also, on that slide, indicate the budget expenditure in the various programs, and the primary issues under administration, the areas for underachievement, firstly, pertained to the vacancy rate. We had set a particular target of meeting the public service vacancy, perform according to the public service standards, but we in fact did not achieve it. The primary reason it was the target we set was 11%, and our vacancy rate was at 2.93%. The honourable members will remember that the department was engaged in a program review, and it took the view that it would not be responsible to be filling positions until the, particularly some of the senior positions, until the review has been concluded. Of course, there are positions that any department, that for all departments, will have those positions like a CFO, a chief audit executive, a person responsible for risk, and we went ahead with those. We also, at the time, provided the committee with made some commitments, and I'll come to that. The other targets pertain to the number of persons with disabilities in our employ. Under operative development, the two areas of underperformance, which I believe will stay with us, will remain areas of underperformance, pertain to the number of incubators that had been established and received support. And that target was not met. And the other one pertained to the SMME framework, which we were to meet with provinces, provincial departments. That has subsequently been corrected. Under the third one, which is also a core business area, the areas of underperformance, much of that has been corrected in the third quarter. But we are fairly confident with some of the delivery in some areas. It pertains to the many of the deliverables under the Enterprise Development and Entrepreneurship Program pertain to targets that are not entirely in our control, where we work with other government departments and structures, or we rely on the support of the public sector. Our expenditure, as honourable members can see, is we were expected to be at around 50%, or at 50% by the end of the second quarter, and the expenditure was at 49.6%. The next few slides, Chair, provides a narrative of some of the highlights. Page 5 speaks to the highlights, and then the next 3-4 pages up to slide 9 speaks to the areas of underperformance, but I think it might be better if I speak to those, given the time limit on the matrix. There are some details on slide 10 on our budget performance. There was an improvement in the budget performance and expenditure as compared to the first quarter. That is depicted on slide 19.
The detail is provided in narrative explanation is on slide 11. I've already referred to the 49.6% expenditure. And to note that 87% of our budget, 86.7%, is for transfer payments, mainly to our entities and specific programs, competition of employees, and 24.3 million, and there was an underspending on that area, underspending of 22.4%, which is attributed to the vacancy rate of 22.9%. That there were, I will see, so there were 56 funded positions vacant at the time. That situation had improved and continues to improve. The goods and services, slide 12, was 17.1 million. And this understanding of 28% in course two. And that goes mainly we spend goods and services mainly allocated to travel and venues, etc. I've already, we can move to slide 14, Chair, where there's the detail of around our performance. And I've spoken to the area of underperformance. And we made the commitment there of the 29 vacant positions that we would fill 17 in quarter three and 12 in quarter four, and we will report on that in our Q3 report. People with disabilities, the department overachieved the national average, as one can see there under the variance column. The national target is 2%. But because the department overachieved on this target in the previous financial year, 3.2 was the achievement, it became the new baseline and also then became the annual target, which I think we will review in the current year, and it is probably advisable to stay within the national target. So even though in underachievement, we had 2.72% in the second quarter, because we have a resignation, it's still above the national average. On the other hand, our target for women at SMS level is 45%, which is below the national target of 50%, but in terms of our own target, we exceeded that and achieved 48%. We're very proud of leading by example. I think we're one of the few departments who managed to pay all of our invoices, valid invoices, within 30 days, and we achieved that again in quarter two. We've also done very well. We believe it's an area that we performed well in over the year, and that is in creating the presence and the voice for small business. And many of these multimedia events and campaigns and outreach programs were not of our term necessarily, because the mandate of the department had been well received and supported. So that is the performance information for program one. For program two, and program three, those are the core business areas, and also just to remind ourselves that they are the programs as so conceptualized when the broadening participation program was with the DDI. So these milestones, outcomes that not necessarily been aligned to the
the new fully aligned to the mandate of the Department of Small Business. And I think it's important when we look at this chair, we must go refine our the way in which we prepare this matrix in subsequent quarters. Because the column one there that says outcome, output, that is a 20, well this is a 3-year, a 5-year strategic plan. So that is the outcome that we want to achieve by 2019. And the column that is of consequence here in this report is column 3, which is the annual target for this year. That slide on page 17 talks about linking cooperatives to high-value market value chains. And the areas are mentioned there, manufacturing, agro-processing, energy, construction, and clothing. And so, what we are reporting here, and a milestone for this quarter was that it assists one cooperative, and we are reporting here that we have exceeded the actual target because we linked 13 cooperatives to value chains, notably that they are all in the same sector. They are all agriculture and with two different private sector partners. And we do believe that these will, in fact, in agriculture is considered one of the growth streams, the growth areas for the economy, and also an area that will create jobs. Then an area where slide 18 speaks to an area of underperformance, and as I said earlier, it is an area of underperformance or non-achievement rather that will be the case even at the end of the year. Because what the incubator support program entails is it was money which GCI made available. It is a tripartite agreement between an applicant and the government department and the private sector. And either a funding arrangement with the private sector, a 60-40 or a 50-50. So there are expectations of different partners that have to be supported. So the department left this target India. As I said, it's one of the existing programs that we got from DTI, but we did not have the budget for it. We have since established that DTI, because of the different mandates that we have, the order to note that DTI did not have a line budget for it. There wasn't a budget item incubator support that could be transferred to us. Instead, what they did, DTI had the MCEP fund, this manufacturing competitiveness enhancement program, and they used the budget from that program to fund the incubators. And so and none of the incubators that we had been working with, for example, some of the incubators that we've identified where there's a very small business were already was in the service sector or was in the retail sector, and those services and retail sectors are not sectors which are priority sectors for APAP and IPAP, the Industrial Policy Action Plan, and therefore it has not been funded. So, and we don't believe that we will receive any funding from the DTI in current financial year, but I will talk about it on the third quarter report. Here we're merely highlighting that we did not achieve it, and I'm saying that we will not achieve it in the third quarter, nor will we do so by the end of the financial year. We did achieve what we said we would as well as progress. The next slide 19, on the review of the Small Business Act, we were also very successful
in the area of support to primary cooperatives as reflected on slide 19 and even in slide 21. This support for secondary co-ops, that is one of the, it's a new instrument, one of the instruments which we introduced that was not present and did not inherit or bring from DCI, and it's a pilot which we have initiated to, and maybe the simplest example is if there's a co-op around agriculture and the farmers, smallholders are very comfortable with primary agriculture, but in order for them to be viable, they have to be able to access markets, and then they don't necessarily always have the skill to engage with and manage the that particular environment. And so the second co-op would be a marketing co-op with which we call that gap. Then I've spoken to the area of underperformance around the national SME cooperative development framework. If we move to target page slide 24, we needed to develop, ultimately it is about providing a gap that we see with the need to provide support to start up SMEs and cooperatives, so the target for the year was to develop a business case and also get lobby the private sector for funding and to contribute towards the fund that we thought should be established, and we had undertook to develop guidelines in the second quarter, and we did not do this. But I think this is one of the areas where we improved, and we will report progress in the third quarter. In terms of the SME and cooperative package, this micro franchisors, the target for year is that to support 5 SMEs, and it is something that we were not going to be doing ourselves. We would do that through a capable service provider, and the target that we set for the year was to procure for second quarter was to procure the services of a service provider, and so we had achieved that milestone. On the centers of entrepreneurship, we report progress on slide 25, and the area of underachievement is around co-location points. This has to do with, we believe that we have a core responsibility to ease the environment in which small businesses have to operate, and to minimize the cost of transaction and the time of transaction for SMEs, and one of the things we think that would help for that are co-location points where there's the one-stop service, and the target for the year is 25. We did not meet the target in quarter 2, but in quarter 3 there is progress. An area that hasn't gone well either was the program that was conceptualized, that is to be introduced with municipalities. This is one of those programs which we inherited also and brought with us from the DTI, and that a very necessary service of upgrading new and existing or establishing new and upgrading existing infrastructure for small businesses, and the idea is that it would be a 50-50 funding with municipalities, and no, we had received, I think, just one proposal, but the proposals that we received did not meet the requirement. We also did not approve any, or the target for the year is that 20 programs to benefit from the Youth Black Supply Development Program, and we did not work as well in that area as we thought we would, nor did we meet the target on the training of new ventures, also of youth enterprises. In terms of the Women's Business Development Scheme, the annual target was that 82 women entrepreneurs would be reported, and two in quarter two. We exceeded the target. In fact, the guidelines were still in the process of being approved, but by that time of the year, there had been over 40 women who had received support. The Bakumile Skills Development Program, the target was met. In quarter two, the informal business traders, we had also exceeded in quarter two the target, and well on our way to the target of 1,000. We'll give more detailed report on that in quarter three report, Chairperson. The red tape reduction has got various legs. There are a set of guidelines that were agreed to a few years earlier, and so we set the target of engaging 20 municipalities on that. So the third leg of our report is we did not simply engage 14 municipalities and not 20. We also said that we have to monitor. We can't just, the engagement with municipalities can't just be a workshop where we do a PowerPoint presentation, but we need to monitor its impact, and we report progress on that. We also indicated that as it is now, the guidelines focus on regulation and the red tape at municipal level, but our wisdom began saying when we were preparing this plan, we should throw the net wider and also look at the legislative and regulatory requirements that were introduced from provinces. And so in quarter three, we said that the study was not concluded. We had planned that it should be the terms of reference for the study should have been approved. I can also say that it was during in quarter two when we started the program review, and we also thought that there were certain interventions that would be impacted by what comes out of the program review, and I will say more about this in the quarter three report. Another area, the final target there on our program, the ultimate one, is on the set aside the public 30% public procurement program, where we thought that 30% practice note needed to be issued. That is a government-wide target. And again, it is a target that is not completely in our control. National Treasury are the custodians of the WFMA, the public, the Preferential Procurement Framework Act, and we support that process, and so we are reporting here that the practice note was not issued, and we will provide a further report on that in the third quarter. And then the last target that we're reporting was the number of cross enterprises that were supported. I'll stop with that on this. I think that is some of the details, Chair. I don't think we are, if I should just go directly into the board for quarter three.
Well,
for the underperformance in that area in the previous one.
in vacancy rate. We can, Major can give more information on the vacancy rate. The vacancy rate increased slightly in the second quarter, in the third quarter rather, Chair. But I think maybe I must talk to these things, perhaps it might be a little bit confusing. I'll talk to those areas of performance and I'll go to the matrix rather. The budget performance, let's go to slide 11. It is at the 3-5. The three quarters within context, and that I think that what this slide shows, that this bar graph shows that the percentage is proportional to, it's kind of in line with what we expect, although we recognize the under-expenditure. Slide 10 talks about information, the narrative to support the graph, 71%, and I have to say from the beginning, this is an area that when we looked at the under expenditure of 71 million, while it's under expenditure because the money is still in our fund, we have to say that it pertains to the areas where this will change, it pertains to funding for operatives and enterprises, and the money has been committed. And there are certain things that our beneficiaries have to do in order for us to disburse the funds responsibly, and there's been a significant change in this under expenditure. But we understand that we have a very small budget and that we must spend the budget that we have been entrusted with. And that it cannot be returned and not reached the fault of that issue. I think the last point that we made there on page 12 is that the point that was made about funds being fully committed. And then page 13, page 13 just explains why we have that delay in the funding. And I think it's also one of those things, as I spoke earlier, about the incubation program. We are still a year, this is still a year in transition for us. This is the first year that the department is functioning independently or as a department and not under the DTI APT, as it did last year, or part of the DTI vote, we have an independent budget vote. But in this year, all of the policies, whether it pertains to travel, whether it pertains to procurement, whether it, all of it, all of our policies, we have to do it through the DTI system. And so, for example, the operative in incentive scheme had an adjudication committee, and we then have learned in the year that we have to establish our own adjudication committee because we have a different priorities to the DTI, and because the DTI committee could no longer was eligible to do the adjudication. The reason we had the delays in quarter two was for 2 or 3 months that the adjudication committee could not sit, but it subsequently from about the middle of about June, July, it has been functioning. And it begins to give the information there on how many applications have been received. And then on the Isibande Women's Fund, there was the under expenditure there was because we are busy engaging CIVA with a view of transferring that fund to CIVA, but we will give more detail around that when we give our report on our program review. If I go to
slide 15, Chairperson, the situation has improved, or is really much the same as I had in the added in quarter two. Just that they, I've mentioned that our vacancy rate increased by 2%, and not necessarily because we had more people resigning, but in quarter, in the third quarter, we, the Treasury gave us additional funding for positions, which means that there were more funded positions that we had. That is how come the vacancy rate increased. But we're still in the process of recruiting. We can give the detail. We have a report somewhere, Chairperson, on how we have progressed in terms of the number of appointments that need to be made. One, for example, I can say that in December already, we finalized the appointment of a CFO. But because the CFO is somebody who is in the public sector and comes from a different department, there's a bit of a tug of war around when the person is going to be released. So that's but we will have a new CFO by the start of the financial year, and we're hoping that the person can join us in next month. After six, around in the area of communications and media is significant. Also to note that we've achieved the success, and in the meantime we don't have any budget for communication, and our communications team consists of one person. So, and that is also an area that needs to be improved next year. Slide 7 just gives the detailed information, and that just confirms again the impact of the vacancy rate on our expenditure. Our total payment in Program 1, the available budget, is around 50%, and should have been around only 25% at this time of year. Program 2, we retain the our success in the area of linking cooperatives to high market, to value gains, and we note here that opportunities or that we are most comfortable with still remain where we have a greater success is in agriculture. We think that there are huge opportunities in construction, there are huge opportunities in tourism, which are all growth areas, and we hope as our transversal agreements become operative and small businesses really begin to benefit from our transversal agreements, we will see a change in the sectors that are being supported. Chair, I spoke at length about the incubator support in quarter two, and to say that we've recently informed in February we had our first draft MTF allocation information in December, but we were very pleased when that was reviewed early this year, and with the February cabinet meeting we were actually allocated an additional 150 million rand. So part of that money, it will go, will be allocated to incubators, because we think that we cannot ask the private sector to, or let's say the best practices show, if we are able to say to the private sector, we are putting so much on the table, private sector is a lot more willing to put money to where we are also willing to put our money. Another part of that amount will go to policy and research. As it stands, the department doesn't have a policy and research branch, and we believe that it is absolutely important for a national department to have a policy and research and that monitoring as well. So part of the budget will go towards that, and part of the budget will also go towards some of the posts that we need to fill in that area. At the same time, honourable members will probably know, while most of the departments out there have cuts in their budgets, we are one of the fortunate departments who got additional funds. But I think it was the case of Robin Peters, very poor, but all our members with their cuts as cabinet causes across all government departments. So I think there are compensation of employees' budget is down by 10 million. Next year, we have to reduce it by 16 million, and in the outer year, by another amount, which means that we can only incur a recurrent liability, like SARS, in agreement with what will be available in subsequent years as well. The work on the a review of the Small Business Development Act. We are behind. We have, however, the consultations we concluded. Now, in quarter four, we have a project plan which we are monitoring very, very strictly on when that review will be concluded. And according to our estimates, it should get rich cluster by October, and if it then goes through directly, it should sort of reach Parliament in November, and I guess only ready for consideration in next year. We did not put it on the parliamentary calendar for this year, noting that it will only reach Parliament very late in the year, and it's not likely to be concluded after just one sitting. In terms of the primary cooperatives, I talked to that, and you see that there are some retail cooperatives that have been exposed to markets and linked to funding. The on slide 13, the secondary cooperatives, we then, as I said in the quarter two report, this is the one new instrument that we introduced at DSVD in order to respond to a gap in the ecosystem or in small business value chain. But what we learned is that the requirements were too stringent. I think what we're learning more and more, Chair, is that many of the incentives that we have inherited, or also the hats that we wear when we develop grants, we wear the hat, we put use incentives like banks, and we don't really put incentives that are empowering and by shooting ourselves in the foot, but just to show a degree of transparency. We were developing an instrument to support informal businesses, and it was a very necessary instrument because we recognize as we go out and do the work with informal businesses, sometimes they just need a little bit of an injection to be taken to the next level. So, for example, the lady who is making pancakes or fresh cook outside the factory, if that person had two extra gas stoves and a pan, she could make a few more in per hour and increase her sales. So the intention is good. So the grant that we give is from 500 rand to about 60,000 rand, or the maximum of 80,000 rand. But it then said that it was 60,000 rand initially. Then we said, but in order for you to qualify is the normal thing they said, you have to have bank statements of 6 years, 6 months. You have to have a tax clearance certificate. And we said, but it defeats the purpose. That, until that, running that small business isn't necessarily going to have bank accounts. She might be saving her money in a stock tower, or she might be saving her money differently. So just give you an example, Chair, of how the intention is good, but when we actually develop the incentive, we think like bankers, and we've got, our frame is different. So I think the same thing happens here, and know that you will get it right. And so I think this is with the secondary cooperatives. Also, we're making those changes. You see that there's an improvement around the national SME cooperative framework and the task team, and we met our target in that regard because we've done some integrated planning there. Our goals straight to program three chair, where we work with the 2019 targets of ultimately supporting startups, where we have been able to generate interest from the private sector to be supporting startups, and very keen for that to begin to show the impact, or if we can find the agreement and make decisions. On the micro-size franchises, in quarter two, I reported that we developed the terms of reference, and then and this quarter we are saying that the service providers not appointed. Again, Chair, it has to do with the DTI has, we work through DTI and DTI system. I mean, they are one of the better performing departments and the departments who have set standards for the rest of the public service, and we are learning to compare to comply with that. And so it's something that we will get right. I think there were some things that changed in the bidding process which we needed to comply with. The Centre for Entrepreneurship, we started that chair, we launched the Centre of Entrepreneurship in Durban in November last year. I have talked to the infrastructure program. I understand about there was also one project which the committee visited, which applied to the department. And sometimes I think we have different reports on what actually transpired. Our records on this is that there's been a conversation with this municipality for 2 years, and that they have not complied. We have engaged with them, and we continue to work with the Makadu municipality so as to be able to co-fund with them the infrastructure improvement for Sukuma market. And we are very keen for this to happen. This would be the first case where we have been able, where we will be applying the socioeconomic infrastructure fund. Because I think we have to be able to show municipalities that has worked somewhere else. The youth enterprises, there's an improvement compared to the previous quarter. I think we had a red performance in the previous quarter. On the training for the youth ventures, we continue to underperform. Under the women's business development scheme, we met the target, we exceeded the target, particularly the number of women that have been supported through the Black Business Supply Development Program. On the Bafumile program, slide 31, honorable members will remember in quarter two, we met the target, but quarter three did not. And what the I think the corrective action is stated incorrectly. What in fact happened is that this program, there was a budget for the program, they exceeded their budget because of the choices that they made in terms of how to apply it, and then they ran out of budget after meeting the first and the second quarter targets. The last one on that page, the informal business enlistment program. It is one of the programs that we're very proud of. We exceeded, we met the, although the quarter three milestone was 250 traders selected, and we had already trained by this time, it was 99 that we trained in quarter three, but overall the target for the year was, is 1,000, and we have exceeded that target, and this is one of the target programs that we're doing together with the wholesale and retail CETA, and that we're going to, because of the success and its impact, we consider in the process of expanding this pilot to benefit 7,000 traders next year. The red tape reduction program, as I talked to this in quarter two, and eventually, given the outcomes of the program review, we have reviewed the study. The terms of reference were, we had issued it, but we then decided, before it went through the bidding process, we withdrew it in order to expand it, so that it takes a review of the entire landscape, and what isn't reflected here is that this red tape reduction is a target that we are driving for the whole of government, and it's one of those that is a target in the medium-term strategic framework, and it's a target which the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation keeps an eye on. In fact, the report that Ms. Adele does to Cabinet reports on this area as well, and the President of DPME therefore supports the expanded view that we have taken in terms of the study. And I have chairperson talked to the second block target that was not met. Safe to say that the in order to issue the practice note, Treasury will the act has to be reviewed, but in the interim, Treasury will change the regulations. They will increase the thresholds in that are currently contained in the regulations, so as to open more windows for small businesses. And in terms of craft enterprises, have benefited. The report, report is clear that we have overperformed in terms of the targets that have been set. So, Chairperson, I think that overall we probably the lessons that we take from this is to we're in the process of finalizing a strategic plan. So both the lessons that we pick up from this in how we set targets and from the program review, we'll see a difference in that area. We don't believe that we will get to 100% performance in the fourth quarter, but we will be frank about understanding what the root causes for the performance is either way. So we put the reports before you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I will now have an opportunity for the members to ask any questions and make comments.
The Innovation Support Programme has long been something that this committee has shone a torch on with regard to sort of orphan status, which seems to be continued. Now it appears that the DCI has almost sort of like disguises as entrepreneurs that no kind of their program is part of small business charities controlling, but it also has their budget. It's greatly concerning. I just want to find out when you said that no budget, nothing for this year. What is happening to those incubators that have been set up? Who is controlling those? Are they sustaining themselves? Where is the money coming from? Is it the DTI that's overseeing them, or is it your department that's overseeing them? The next point refers to the enormous disparity between programs two and programs three, i.e. cooperatives and enterprise development. I mean, it's so huge, one wonders whether program two even deserves the name of being a program. And I know that this is an issue which was brought up in the strategic review, but I wonder if you could comment on whether it actually deserves the title of being a program with a budget of 11 million as opposed to 800 million or thereabouts. In terms of the budget adjustment, so you're referring to the adjustment of the budget in the medium-term extension framework in October. And if so, budget variance is 71 million or it's still quite significant variance. I mean, even notwithstanding that the budget was adjusted, you're still unbudgeting, or at least underspending by quite a significant amount. And I just wanted to find out, how is it possible that your budgeting adjustments do not take into account your expected underspend, if I may put it that way. I think it's important that you refer to the lack of a policy and research trust in the department. This again was highlighted by the strategic review. And what steps are you taking to fill that gap, even in the current situation where there is no budget for it? Are you able to give us some guidance that poultry research has been given some attention? Then turning to the strategic review and recommendations, I see that this is scheduled for our committee to listen to your review on that, I think next Wednesday. So we're going to be very interested to see what the outcome of that is. It does have huge implications for the way in which the department operates. I mean, in particular, the recommendation that virtually all your programs be headed over to the agencies, which is going to have a huge impact on your staffing, on the whole way in which the business of the department is managed. Now, I don't want to preempt what you're going to be saying next week, but just to sort of highlight that I expect that the committee will be very interested to see what the department's response is to that review. Just in terms of the National Small Business Act, I think you make mention in the second quarter report that the department will actually be exceeding its legislative mandate until that act is amended. I mean, does that present any legalistic procedural issues or problems? That you'll be effectively undertaking programs and policies which are not mandated in that legislative framework. I'm interested in the bulk buying solutions that you refer to. You didn't actually mention it in your presentation, but it was in one of the slides in quarter three. And I'd just like to get some information on, is the department working with any third parties on developing a bulk buying system? If so, who are those third parties? And if you could just expand on that, please. Then, finally, the 30% procurement issue. The members of this committee seem to be under misapprehension that 30% procurement is mandated and all departments should be implementing it. That certainly was the impression that was given by the chair on our oversight visit, and it's clearly not the case. And I think it behoves this committee to be not misleading its stakeholders that this 30% procurement is actually legal and regulated, because it's not. And when does the DG expect the Treasury to make these amendments, not only to the 30% procurement, but also to the 90-10 and the 80-20 regulations pertaining to tenders for government business? Because these are obviously going to have a massive impact as well. You can't do one without the other. it pronounced the Department of Inspect those regulations also to be forming a part of the practice note to be issued by the Treasury, and so it went. Thank you.
Can I make a correction on what the Honourable Chancellor said in relation to the independent procurement? I always say that the President in his State of the Nation address of 2015 said in South Africa, independent of goods and services, we be patient. Consumer business is a cooperative, and I even go to an extent of saying whatever is said by the State President in the State of the Nation address becomes a policy of the country, which then means that there has to be a department that takes that and process it to either make it an act or a policy. So there is no misleading that has happened in terms of conveying that to the stakeholders. Because if then there is no department that is taking responsibility of making that either an act or a regulation, the stakeholders must end up. Because the President has pronounced on that, so they should know that this is what the State President has said. Therefore, there has to be a department that takes responsibility. And in our case, as I said, in the case of this department, it has to keep the Department of National Treasury on its toes to make us a policy or regulate on that. So there is no misleading. Yes, Honourable
Chair. Chair, I think just one has to accept that a policy announced in the State of the Nation address does not have legal force, and so it is legislated. So whilst it might be the policy of the government to implement a 30% procurement policy, there is no legislative basis on the respect of the implementers. And we have seen in many of our conversations with departments and state agencies that their attempts to do so have been thwarted because of the fact that that legislative framework has not been put into place. So that is all I'm saying, is whilst it makes policy, and you're totally entitled to state that, it is not possible for government agencies to implement it until the legislative framework is being put into place by Treasury.
Then it is incorrect to say we are misleading the portfolio committees when we are complaining that to our constituencies, because we then have to point out where the bottleneck is, and it becomes our responsibility to unlock that bottleneck. Are there more questions?
Honourable Mark. Thank you, sir. Actually, I need to clarify the issue. Just on one thing. In page 7 of your, I think it's called a three-document summary, where you mention that the Durban University of Technology Center for Social Entrepreneurship was launched on 27 November 2015. So I just need clarity as to the relationship between that particular institution and that school in particular, with the department. And again, how are you intending to use or to work with the school in further the goals of the department?
Or politics. That's what I want to know. I can delete.
So it says that is the question of the government. At what stage are you going to close this gap? Because now we are about to finish the last quarter of the year. And again, about the Supreme Court of Areas for National Small Business Act Amendment to leave. You said there's no proposed areas of amendment. And since day one, when we start with the amendment, we echoed that the name must include cooperatives. And that can be done by amending the act. So when you said there's nothing which can propose, maybe before maybe you come, you came to join the government, but I thought that the latter victim which had this briefed you about that. Please tell us about the under expenditure of 73.1 million, which is 8.2%. So can you maybe try to explain to us how I'm going to make sure that at the end of this financial year, maybe we can reduce this under expenditure, because most of the challenges I see here, you wrote that there's no enough funds, and when we don't spend some money, it will be very difficult for the minister in the cabinet to ask that they implement the fund when we find ourselves having underspent the money allocated for us. So try to brace us how I'm going to make it to reduce this expenditure in this last quarter of the year. That's page 21. Yeah, I think it's there on the summary. You are about the review of the act. We are still insisting the name cooperatives to be included as part of the name of the department. Thank you. Okay. So I think the page itself in numbering, but it's about the program 3, enterprise development and entrepreneurship, government against target. About the Chakuma market, which you said it was there on the quarter 2, as it is now, it's quarter 3, it's exactly the same challenges. What are you doing for this last quarter of this thing of Chakuma? So we went there, and we found that there is not even the municipality is like it's not doing anything. The chairperson also advised them to go to the LED offices in the municipality. And also the department officials, whether they are trying to go there themselves to see what is happening on the ground. Maybe also to explain what your relationship with these provincial offices which are dealing with all these small businesses and cooperatives and the municipality, more especially the loss of the LED. What we found when we were at the oversight, we found that the LEDs, like some of the cooperatives, they said they came, they just come and catch them and go. So we want to know the department as a relationship maybe, what can you do to avoid these meetings?
Well, one of the reasons I guess for underspending, I think is the high vacancy rate. Now I want to know how vacancies are dealt with, and why are they taking so long to fill? Does the department enhance specific skills or do they have skills? Because it is taking long to fill vacancies, so how do they do that? So secondly, grants are given, we're told between 500 rand and 60,000 rand. and there are some companies that are not banking. So those that are not banking, how do they maintain accountability, or how do they ensure that there's proper accountability for the money that they've been granted? The primary cooperatives that receive training, it includes bookkeeping. Now, how long does the training take place? And the numbers of those that are trained seem to be low, when there's always understanding, and I want to know why. And lastly, with the training of selected informal traders, the training includes physical skills, hygiene, and food safety. Now, and until today, we have stores where sellers are flipping in food stores. So, if people are trained in hygiene and food safety, how does the department ensure that there is compliance? Because people are exposed to unhygienic food that has been sold to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. My question is on quarter 2, slide 17. When we talk of the pilot 3 cooperatives project in value linked market value, how, at what stage are these pilot projects, at what stage are they, and are we realizing the value? You know, can we say the purpose for which the pilot was set up are rendering fruits? Then the next one is on slide 18 in the same quarter 2. The incubators to support cooperatives. How are these incubators related to the provinces? Does it mean they move from province to province, or are they physically located in the provinces? I cannot visualize how the incubators are there. The last one on 24, slide 24, it is mentioned that 5 cooperatives, let's see, 5 SMMEs packaged as micro franchises. Can the department give more detail on that? Just so that it makes more sense. I'm not fully understanding and appreciating. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Chair. First of all, let me just congratulate the department on the performances that has been done in quarter 3. If you're looking at the performances, I mean the reports for the performances of quarter 2, there were some challenges, but going to the quarter 3, they've managed to correct some challenges that we're facing, like underperformance. So I think the department has done well on that part. But I think there are areas that need to be looked at in terms of the transition agreements. I think the department must just make sure that it happens so that the department can function well. Let's go to page 21. There is a review of cooperative development development. I think you just said that the conservation were not done. I think in that area is where we need to make sure that you correct that so that there will be a speedy performance. On the page 27, you talk about the 400 startups, but you said in the service provider, they were not appointed due to the delay on the procurement processes. I think in that one you need to look at. But in all everything, I think the department has done well so far. Thank you very much.
Before the department responds, I would also want to add another question.
Thank you, Jameson. I think I got it correctly that there is no budget for communication in the department. Then what I'm interested in, how is the department communicating with all the cooperatives, or how the market itself it doesn't have somebody to be able to speak on its behalf. Then I also, some other interested in the informal traders, the standards and training informal traders. Is it possible to dissect it by province, the standards and traders, so that we can be able to see whether the 620 is moving towards being biased into the deep rural areas? Thank you.
I also want to add on the question of the council to clarify some of the questions. One is on the amendment of the national the question that has been asked by another team that would be related to the unofficial amendment. I think when we were attending the second short-term conference of the Small Business Development Institute, the one that was the amendment that says the Small Business Development Institute and the member organizations that fall under it, committee on the head. Does it mean that it is that they are not popular? They are not popular from the department or they are not popular from the then the second question is related again to question asked by Honorable Lauke around the Chakuma community market. His phrase and the question is number one. How do officials engage with FOPISA that comes from the project owner or a municipality? It is still not clear to me as to whether the proposal came from the municipality or the proposal came from the women. And his question is saying, how do officials in the department engage with the project proposal? Do they engage in it through a paper work that that comes to the department or after receiving the pay salary? And simple that they go out on site, meet with the Makadu local municipality, meet with the Zebe Israeli municipality, and meet with the affected people that the project is going to address their affairs needs. Or they just interact with the people. Because if the response is they go out, then the second question that is asked by Honorable Malawi, in terms of the relationship there between the department, the district municipality, which is Bere, and the local municipality, which is Makadu, and the project owners themselves, would also be clear as to which role player has to do what, which would then inform both the transversal agreement and the guidelines. So that is what I wanted to end on the question that has been asked by Honorable Lawson. I will reserve my comments for to the last when you have responded to this question.
If I may, I'm going to ask my colleagues to respond first to the ones that apply to them, and I will take the rest. Maybe I can ask Zor and Shumani to start responding to the one on the vacancies and give some feedback on that. And I don't think you can also respond on the understanding or whether you will address them. Just to address the question that pertain to you as we go around.
All right, thank you very much, Kitchi. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, member and colleague. I will attempt to reply to the question about the vacancy rate. I will say from the onset that the issue has been raised on a number of occasions here at the committee, and it is not a matter of the department taking a sort of lackadaisical approach to addressing this important issue, but it has been attributable to two important elements within the department. The first one is the program review that took place. So when the program review was underway, the decision was taken consciously that we should not go ahead and make strategic appointments in the department because we are anticipating that the findings and the recommendations of the program review might make some strong suggestions about how the department should look like. And indeed, just to give a quick preview of the recommendations of the program review, one of them was that the department must put together a structure, a value chain based structure, which then made the strong suggestion that our current structure was not sufficient to address the such needs of SMEs and cooperatives on the ground. And as a result, the two main BDG positions in the department have to be reconsidered and redesigned, because as you see from our current programs, we have one program on cooperative development, and program three is entrepreneurship and enterprise development. So we then had to make drastic changes, and the new structure now that will come into play from the 1st of April looks completely different to what we have right now. So that's just some of the reasons that we had to take into consideration in filling the vacancy. And the second core important reason is the budget allocation from National Treasury. Now, we didn't have a budget for some of the positions that were key to the functioning of the department, like in the finance and HR functions within the department. And when Treasury then made an allocation to the department to fill some of the critical vacancies in that space, the vacancy rate then shot up. Hence you saw that we had vacancy rate, I think, of about 22% in quarter two, and it increased by 2% in quarter three. The main reason for that was the budget allocation from National Treasury. I'll let Suman answer the one about understanding. You want to present that? Sure.
Good morning. I will address the question asked by Honorable Chan on why didn't the adjustment estimate address the current unexpenditure. As far as I know, the adjustment estimate bill is not in sight. And that meant that we are still using the projections that we made at the beginning of the financial year. Because when we made our performance, we measured them against performance against projection. So we did revise our projection, but they are not yet approved because the deal for the adjustment estimate is not yet signed. And signing it at this point is actually pointless because it's not going to assist us anymore. The second question was asked by Honorable Morawski on the under-expenditure supplement to 1 million on how we are going to reduce it. We have most specifically to CIS and BDSP, we do have a project plan to ensure that the money is dispersed to the correct and eligible applicants by the end of the financial year.
Can I just make one last addition on the filling of vacancies? One of the issues that we have is that the vacancies take long to fill because of the vetting and other administrative processes that have to happen before a person can be confirmed. I'm looking at a report here. We have about 14 positions in the finance and HR division that have been filled. Well, the appointment will be made as soon as the election processes have been completed. So from our end, we try to push as much as we can, but there are other government prescripts that we have to respect, the diversification of qualification, the criminal record, and all of that. But we have about 7 people from finance advisors, the accountants who will be coming on board as soon as the verification processes have happened, and about 7 from HR, but mainly under the program 1, who will then stabilize the department so that we are able to function independently from the DTI. Thank you.
Okay, I may just tie up the one on vacancy to give the assurance. The other question was also said, or do you headhunt? Now, in instances where we have advertised twice and we have not found a candidate, we will headhunt. Or in areas that it is known, where there is evidence that there are scarce skills. For example, internal auditors, senior internal auditors, we know that you are drawing on a very small pool of professionals who will come into the public sector. So there are such instances, or either that there were 2 instances where candidates were committed. And when it's a senior management post, the person then also has to go for a competency assessment. Now, while the competency assessment it is indicative and one that can use that information as developmental, but if you come with a very senior position in a department, so either say this person is a complete, it's an area of strength, or it's a developmental area, what is the red? Say it's a weakness. So orange, red, amber, or red. And all of the areas are red. And say it's an important position, and I'm not saying that was the case. You just can't make that appointment. It would be irresponsible if it's a position where you know you only going to have one person like that. Say the organogram often just allows for one chief in audit executive.
and perhaps you can't afford still to be developing a candidate. So in some instances, we have chosen to re-advertise or restart the process, because we think it's a responsible thing to do. But then maybe what we can do for you is just maybe just give a little matrix, because I think it is an area that the committee should be have an interest in. It just say we said we will fill 17 vacancies in quarter three, we will fill 14 vacancies in quarter four. How far are we? We don't have to give names, but we can give you that. So that, I mean, we have got the matrix for that effect. So you can just see where we've made some effort and where you are stuck.
If I understand you well, correct me if I'm wrong. What you are saying is that one, the vacancy rate has increased because Treasury has now given you a fund in relation to what you had in terms of your organogram, the people that you would want to have in the department. That is cause number one for the high vacancy rate. Cause number two for the high vacancy rate is that as much as you have presented to us an organogram, should take into consideration that you are in a transitional phase. And during that phase, you are also assessing the programs that you inherited, which are then going to inform you on whether you need this program together with its vacancies, or you are also going to introduce another program which requires new businesses. And I hear you correctly, that's what you are saying. So you are then saying the next issue. For those vacancies that you are certain that you need, you have then gone out to other sites and you are in the process of filling them up. That was the thing. Can you say it loudly so that you can be
responsible? Yes, Chair. I'm saying that just with one correction. We receive money from Treasury for some of our posts, not all of our posts. When we started as a department, we just took over the broadening participation program, and the only money we were given in addition to that was the money required to establish the ministry. And so in the middle of last year, we received the budget to fund some of the posts. Because, for example, not all of the, just as an example, the posts that ETI gave us, ETI did not give us an internal audit position. This is an example. They seconded somebody for a while, but they did not give us the position or the budget. They did not give us a communications person, nor a budget for communication. So they gave us some, so not all of our core positions are funded yet, but yes, they have given us money subsequently. In the middle of last year, and now for the start of the new financial year.
Chairperson, can you be given an idea of how many posts are not funded? Because when one looks at a vacancy rate, one thinks that nothing's happening, it's taking too long to fill in the vacancy. So can we be given an idea of how many are not funded? And when the corrective action here says the department plans to meet the targets, while among the targets there are some that are not funded, is this accurate? Because if the others that are not funded, I think
should be a reflection in the doctrine, so that when they talk about corrective action, that there can be an accurate expectation that there is a corrective action will be taken. And
I think we when we did the second quarter report, we wanted to be specific. We wanted to say target 5,000 to the committee as assurance. So by that time we had a project plan. So in the second quarter report we said we will fill 17 vacancies in quarter 3 and we'll fill another 14 vacancies in quarter 4 according to this plan. This target that we, I just said, we have set for us, that target we will meet. So at that time there were 35 vacant funded posts. How many vacant funded posts there are now, I don't have that information. But I certainly, if one of my colleagues has it, but I certainly can make that part of the, if it's three slides in the report that I said I will give chair. Because I think Honourable Measure is correct. If you look at the vacant rate from the perspective of funded posts, it gives you one picture. You look at the vacancy rate from the perspective of unfunded posts. If you take out the unfunded posts, just putting, or you look at the total cost of establishment, you have a higher vacancy rate. But you look at the establishment just from those that are funded, it gives you a different view. But we can't change that. We've got to keep it as an aspiration. Because once we don't have those unfunded posts as part of our establishment, we lose it. We've got to go through that whole process of DPSA and Treasury again.
Thank you, CG. Thank you, Chair. I think I've got three questions that I want to talk to you. The question one is the realistic implications of the Act. Our interpretation on that question is that the proclamation by the President, by its nature, provides the legal power to the Minister. Therefore, the amendment of the Act, the centrality of the amendment of the Act is not necessarily in relation to the fact that the Act still has the name of the Minister of the Industry and all other positions that are related to it. However, we still feel very strong that we need to amend the Act so that it can align itself to the mandate of the Department. In doing so, obviously, we have to look at matters that are incidental there, which includes even changing the names of the ministers incarcerated in there. The issue on the bulk buying, of course, yes, we agree. We have a company or organization that we're working with, Cost Logics, as a partner, because we very much mindful of the fact that we have to provide an opportunity for our enterprises to use to use mechanisms that allow them to buy in bulk, so that they can use economies of scale in terms of what is happening in their enterprises. Especially because we know, and experience is telling us that, especially the foreign companies or foreign businesses that are operating in townships, that's the mechanism that they are using. So we're partnering with that company because of their experiences around this issue. To answer their feedback to do that. I think the last question that I picked up was from Honourable Mabasa around the five SME package franchisors. I think we've identified over the years that small businesses or potential small businesses are not accessing what we call mainstream franchise businesses because of the costs involved. So this program, in principle, is actually trying to develop what we call micro franchisors that are easily accessible in terms of the cost, because the cost nature of such a program is very low in comparison to your McDonald's, your Chicken Nickens, and them as mainstream franchisors. So this is what we are trying to do. But also, we are trying to enhance the question of empowerment, because we know very well that the franchise industry is still very much not transformed, and we use this instrument to actually do that. Thank you very much.
I'm smiling. I'm smiling because I think that as a country we need to do both. We need to support the small franchises that we're talking about. But we also need to transform the existing franchising industry. It can't be corrected that one family can own 59 Kentucky stores. When we are talking about a radical transformation of the economy, and all other things that the consumers won't eat, it would mean that we are not implementing the policies and the resolutions that we take in terms of a radical transformation of the economy. The economy in South Africa is structured in the same way as the land distribution in this country was. That is the truth of the matter. And we can't be consistently perpetuating the separate development approach that was implemented during the understanding. As much as it is expensive to access the franchise of the existing franchises, we have to take the bull by its horn and deal with that matter, because our failure to deal with that matter would actually mean that we agree that the capital monopoly must continue in South Africa even when there is a black government. So your approach is a soft approach, and our approach will not be a soft approach. We said in the past, leave that matter to us. Continue with a soft approach because you are just an entity. But the issue of transformation means radical transformation of the economy, means political engagement, because it's not just the monopoly capital that is not racially based. When we talk of racism in South Africa, we should be also talking of racism in terms of the economy. Not only racism in terms of what people call other. Because the fundamental issue in this country is land, is racism in terms of land ownership, and racism in terms of the economy. So, I say what you are saying in relation to what you are doing as an entity. But until that time, we confront racism in terms of the economy, we will not radically transform this country. We will remain with people who are workers and consumers and others are business owners. And we know how that is done in this country. It's structured along racial divides of the country. Period. Now I want to come to my observation. Honorable Chan is asking a question of the discrepancy in relation to funding of program 2 and program 3. And he is saying in his view, which I agree 100% with, he is saying program 2 doesn't even deserve to be called a program when you look at the discrepancy in funding between program 2 and program 3. But in the voting, what Honorable Chan is saying, I want to make a difference for everyone here to understand. One, the NDP talks about active participation of communities in the economy. That means
communities need to not only participate in the economy as workers and consumers of the services. That is the first thing that is said in the NDC. Then you then need to analyze the social economic conditions in South Africa and say there are uneven levels of development in our country. And how do these uneven levels of development present themselves when you look at South Africa? Let's say you are flying in a helicopter, you are looking at South Africa from above. You will see underdeveloped areas that are poor in rural areas, peri-urban countries. And then you will see developed areas in urban. That is it. What you will see. So when you are doing your budget, you need to be mindful of that situation, that there are uneven levels of development in our country. Then the third issue that you need to look at. You need to look at what is this country called in terms of the economy. It's called a new economy. And what drives this mixed economy is the three pillars. This economy, which is mixed, is driven by three pillars. The first pillar is the state. Through state-owned enterprises, there are seven, plus minus 707 of them. The second pillar is the private sector. People who would come together, maybe myself only, or myself and my brother, or three people or whoever, but privately owned company representing the private sector. The third pillar of the economy is cooperative, representing the community. Now, if you look at what I said as the second issue that you need to look at, how cooperative then currently enabling community to participate in the economy, actively participate in the economy, not just as consumers, as makers? And the answer is no. As much as we would have so many registered cooperatives, and they are operating west in the periphery and getting only breadcrumbs. I don't know the analysis that was used by Honorable Chang when he looked at the discrepancies, but I know the analysis that would be used by the ANC. Is the uneven level of development, is the big economy maker of South Africa, and the role then that has to be played by cooperatives in changing that scenario. Then if you have that understanding, you would then not have progress too. That has got a small budget, but expected to facilitate participation of communities in the mainstream economy. If you do that, it means that you have not understood what drives the mixed economy of this country and where are underdevelopment in. And who is currently not participating in the economy, actively participating in the economy. It would mean that there is a disjunction in terms of understanding. And my question then is, do you share that understanding, or you have not gone through that deep analysis so that you can put a winnable key to treasury when requesting funding for cooperatives?
My second question relates to your presentation. Well, I am beginning to feel that the department is beginning to appreciate that there is a principle of cooperation. That says cooperation shall cooperate. The specialists who are now beginning to have a program that is looking at the secondary marketing co-op. To me, it indicates that you are now beginning to understand the concept of cooperation. That a secondary cooperative is not necessarily a geographical location. A secondary cooperative is there to provide a service to the primary cooperative. And in this case, the secondary marketing cooperative plays a role of ensuring that the primary cooperative will have access to the market. My question is, will the secondary cooperative also include, play the role of ensuring that primary cooperatives are able to access raw materials at a lower cost, minimal? If it's agriculture, it's called primary cooperatives that are involved in agriculture, the secondary cooperative will be the one that will negotiate prices and value for primary cooperatives, fertilizers and all the food. Or it will just be confined to them, ensuring that the primary cooperatives have got access to the market. Then, the third question that relates to that is linked to the question that was asked by Honorable Lawler. What relationship? Because last year we visited Togo, the fresh produce market had Isuzu Cup. And the reason was that there were no primary cooperatives in Northern Africa that could feed into the fresh produce market. We've been to Limpopo, Zambia. They get a fresh produce packet, they get a checker inside. Now, if that is the model of the department, it would mean that they have to be a support system for development of the primary cooperatives and suppliers and members of the secondary cooperatives. And the secondary cooperative, which will then become the owner of the fresh produce market. The question then is, in your presentation, third presentation of the registered cooperative, about 53% of the registered cooperatives are agricultural cooperatives. The 9-point plan highlights agriculture as one of the 9-point plans. The uneven levels of development in the country point us to underdeveloped areas as with poverty and unemployment as rural, where the only intervention in terms of job creation and dealing with poverty would be agriculture. Are you then, as this department, working closely with the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform and different municipalities that have got right elements for this project matter? Develop the supply base through cooperatives that are involved in agriculture, and then to give a lot of solution and ensure that the fresh produce market that exists there are not going to be available. And then they give access to the market. So that your funding model shifts from funding a cooperative that begins to fund a value chain, which includes the supply base of the primary co-op and then the secondary co-op that provides that service to its members who are primary cooperatives. Is that the thinking or it is just like before?
No, my question is not answered.
Of Gauteng. he came with his complete plan of economic development. But then we requested that we zoom into the issues that are related to small and medium enterprises, which then spoke to the township development, spoke to rural development, spoke to issues of small and medium enterprises and the informal sector, particularly in cities, because sometimes we tend to ignore what is happening in the inner city. We will have an infrastructure development here. And one of the things that we're raising very strongly as far as infrastructure development is concerned is also the fact that you have CEDA and FIFA on the one hand, and they also have some old projects that are sitting there, and we're saying they cannot not look into those programs working together with CEDA, so that our support to small and medium enterprises is not always isolated to little individual approaches by the three different layers of government. Lastly, within the concept or context of working with the provinces, we raise very sharply the issue of local economic development, because the 2 years that we've been in office have clearly indicated to us that if you don't fix the local economic development structure, there's just no way that you yourself as a department can be able to be successful. And I must say, the response that we are getting, obviously, from the Premier and the MECs, we're still struggling in as far as local government is concerned. That's why we are going also through COGDA to have a conversation with COGDA so that we can be helped in ensuring that this local economic development factors are trending. Coupled with that, we have a feeling that if we talk about co-location, you can't talk about co-location without also involving the local economic development structures, because some of them sit with structures which are very viable for that. So we're saying that our original plan really of talking to local economic development structures, we realize that we can't zoom into them alone without having to speak to the premiers and elevate the importance of local economic development structures as well as the MECs. Thank you, Chair.
I know this because I was a district mayor responsible for planning. And what we're trying to get in the process of developing an integrated development plan, one, the response and representation in the integrated development forum by national departments and provincial departments. What used to happen was they would send very junior officials. And as a result, when the district municipality put together an integrated development plan, the what is coming from the Department of Small Business will not be integrated in that plan, resulting with the district municipality not then putting in place the support infrastructure in the main and budget entity, because it is not known by the district municipality that there are 15 cooperatives that are funded by the Department of Small Business, and they are going to be producing in an area that is, one, a road infrastructure, two, water, three, energy, four, telecommunications. And when that happens, this investment that would have been given by the Department of Small Business will only work in isolation, because all the support infrastructure will not be there, because we have not attended the integrated development plan session in a different municipality. Yet, money that would come from Treasury and via the COVID, with been informed by that integrated development plan of the district municipality. So the district municipality is able to get the plan of the local municipalities because they are part of, but very difficult to get the plan of the provincial department and the national department. So my advice is, yes, go to the MEC, but the important structure that develops an integrated development plan is a district municipality. And in a metro, it is a metro, because it is that structure that provides the infrastructure and presents the plan of what is going to happen in this area. And MEC doesn't have an area, UPLNN sector. But a district municipality has got areas because it has got this local municipality and this local municipality, and then it coordinates the whole development that has happened in that particular area. It is a very, very important relationship to build.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Okay. Okay, the question, I think Minister has covered the issue of building the relationships between us and the provinces as well as municipality. The other matter that I wanted to respond to, or is the one that was raised by Honourable Lawuti, he asked about cooperatives that we are talking about. There are four cooperatives that are in Gauteng, four from Mpumalanga, eight from Northwest, and two from KZN, and that adds up to 18, and then the additional two are from Mpumalanga, but they are not planning as part of the FAP project this year because of the drought. So they leased their funds to a commercial fund. Just to add on the issue of understanding, that was highlighted by Honourable Lawuti again, if the issue of what we presented to the portfolio committee previously, the incentive unit is one of those units that only came to us, or DFDC, from the 1st of April. And we had to start from scratch in terms of setting up new adjudication committees. That process delayed the issue of the, or the, delayed the process of us starting to adjudicate applications and spend more spending time to cooperatives and small businesses. But like Shimani was saying, we have a good plan to put in place. And we're also learning some lessons because we, for example, one of the projects, just to say, Chair, we are a listening department. You went to UKU and you came with some recommendations on one of the projects, especially the one that is led by CORE. During this quarter, which is quarter four, the project has been funded. We learned that we launched our everything the claim with our finance department, the BTI finance, on the 21st of January. And we were told that it was going to be the following week, but that never happened. And the reasons were very administrative because they had to take everything that was submitted to them to National Treasury because it was a new supplier to verify their banking details, their existence, and everything. So, it's a process that delays the disbursement of funding. So what we decided to do now is that as soon as the project is approved, we immediately start with the process of interacting with the international so they can verify their supply. Just to cut the process that is normally delaying the processing of application. The other one is was asked by Honourable Chang on the innovation passport program. Yes, this program is with the DTI, even those incubators that were approved are still under the DTI. But we know that, I think for the past 3 years, 42 approvals were made by the DTI. Out of those 42, 25 were cancelled due to non-performance and 17 of the projects that were approved are active. We are using these lessons from that program to come up with a better product. I think the DG did explain the issue of the tripartite arrangement where you have an applicant and then a private sector and then government on the other side.
it becomes difficult for some private sector partner to come up with the required funding. So our program will use this lesson to make sure that our program is accessible and addresses, I think, the three issues that have already raised in the NDC, which is poverty, inequality, and unemployment. Then the other question was asked by Honorable Mabasa on how long is this pilot going to be. On slide 17, this is a new project, Honorable Mabasa. We were piloting this so that we can use lessons learned to upgrade this program because we can see that it's critical. What we've seen with our partnership with SAD in particular, it is yielding results. We are not just talking about project that are at planning stage. This is the project that was launched by Minister in November in Pumalanga. This is one of the cooperatives that are in Badlands. They already started planting last year. So we are really learning some lessons that we are going to apply when we approach other partners. We believe that we don't have enough budget to work on this progress alone. The other question was, I think on the Chakuma, I think on this one, it talks to the program review. I know it will be presented next week. The service delivery model that we are using, we know that we don't have capacity to be everywhere all the time. We are working on the implementation plan based on recommendations that we need to come up with a single point for SMEs and cooperatives. So our senior branches that are all over the country, they should be able to do the assessment, to do the pre-inspections, to do the M&E of the project that are in this area. So if, for example, the application was sent through a senior branch, they would have to really access the cooperative or the market and giving us or assisted those beneficiaries in filling up the application forms, and so that it doesn't have to come to the office and then it's sent back all the way from Pretoria to Limpopo. So we are working on this. It's a work in progress. Hopefully by this new year we'll have a different working model in terms of fast-tracking and ensuring that we do more than just adjudicate applications, but we can hold applicants if we believe that the project is viable. So whether there's any questions or side points?
This is a follow up on the question on what value are these cooperatives adding. I think besides those pictures that Lindo has put up, we have a few others sort of where we get on-time, online data. This is one from the Gelatong CPA in Brits, which is under irrigation. And I think the difference that we're learning and being able to answer that kind of question, I don't think that and I guess this is something that we will discuss, Minister and Chairperson in the strategic planning, it's the role of the department. And I don't believe that as a national department, our job is to be out there. Our job is to enable, is to coordinate. And so what is useful about this is we found the agreement. And we have to get at what that model provides for is an implementing agent. So there are different ways of doing it. And this implementing agent that we have in the SAP program is one of those who will provide us with live information, with videos, with coordinates, etc. It's a different way of reporting. And so
the information is available, but I think there are some of the places will be planting now in February and others of the harvest, and I guess after that one will be able to say what value has been added. The value of the SAB one is all of the participants in this pilot, there is a guaranteed take-off agreement for their maize. So later in this calendar year, we'll be able to answer that question more fully. Another question from Honorable Meshu on the informal traders. Again, I don't think we should be misrepresenting or extending our mandate. Our mandate is not to be looking at or taking responsibility for all of the informal traders or the issues that you mentioned. Is for us also, and it links, I think, Minister's question and the Chairperson's intervention of working with municipalities, the district municipalities, and the provinces. Because the issue that you raise about traders sleeping in the places where they prepare food, those are things that the health inspector at the local the local authority needs to be taking care of. I think what our report says, these are the modules we make accessible to informal traders as accredited training model, a training program. From the feedback that we get from the traders themselves, they are the ones who can tell us of what they've learned about customer care, what they've learned about occupational health and safety. So those who have gone through the training exercise better different practices. But I don't know that through our interventions, we trust that the people who are exposed to that will change their behavior. I think the jury is for our chairperson of exactly how many informal businesses there are throughout the country. And I think that as we refine our mandate and assert that and understand it in relation to the mandates of other spheres of government, I think there will be greater clarity on that. So I'm just commenting that I don't know whether we have trained 1,062 informal traders. With the money, because it's created so much excitement and you just experience those informal traders and the difference that it makes to them. We're expanding it to 7,000 for the coming year, as I said, but whatever it is, and our guess is this, that it's probably over 2-3 million, if not more, informal traders. I don't know that we'll be able to get to them.
Not necessarily say the Department of Small Business should be responsible for all the needs of the members. But the example that was given is in relation to the training. So in your training, if you are also training people about the importance then there has to be an improvement in that area. Now, government is one government, irrespective of different spheres and different departments. One government. Then the department that is charged with the responsibility of developing that particular sector becomes the chief department. It then plays the role of ensuring that other spheres of government are able to play their role and other sister departments are able to play their role. In the case of hygiene, as much as the Department of Small Business would provide training, but the department is here that has to monitor and ensure that there is hygiene. If the department, if, which is the department that will then have proactive measure. It is the department that issues licenses. So, in our response, we should not look at small business as a federal department. We should look at small business as part of the government family. Meaning that in the training, while that training is happening, the person from LED of local government and the person from licensing department should be part of that training session so as to ensure that whatever role that has to be played by both in that place, that is the question. That is the context in which the question is asked. It is not asked in the context that says the Department of Small Business is the one that has to do the inspection. The Department of Small Business is the one that has to issue licenses or take away licenses. But the Department of Small Business is the core mother of a constituency called small business. And this small business includes the informal sector. So the training process done should lead to the building the capacity of the small business, but also of raising the awareness in terms of the responsibility and the role that has to be played by sister department and other spheres of government. That is the context in which the question is asked. And I don't think that DG, you understood the context in which the question was asked. And I would then give you the opportunity to respond to this question in that context.
Thank you for correcting me, Chairperson, and notice. Also to say that when we implement, again, I think part of the question was another part of a member asked who has been trained and small businesses in rural areas also included in some of the beneficiaries. Again, we have a schedule, a breakdown of where we trained the 1,000 people, and my sense is that there are towns, rural towns that have been included, but I certainly at a city here can't say that deep rural areas have been included. It's only, let me make that information available and can be the charge of that in what we could cover with 1,000 and how we have split that. But as the minister said, our model of when we do this work, we actually as a matter of principle engage with local municipalities. So when we had to go and do the training in Nelson and Mandela Bay municipality, or when we went to Freiburg, I think that was that municipality was, we actually would engage, firstly, get it would be a senior officers that are involved, it would be the local municipality, they certainly are involved also at the graduation of it. So it's not as if we come in there and pick people from, so I think we try and do it so that we pass on the model. But what we have done is also, I think the principle that you have, as you say, we are one government and we drive that principle and attempt to live by it. And one example of the impact of that was because of our popularizing the program, that we've been able to bring the Department of Labor on board. We have, the Department of Labor said to us, they have regional offices that offer a free service on health, occupational health and safety, occupational wealth and safety to citizens. And so they have offered to go to all of the 1,000 people who we trained in the year that's passed to offer that training and to make that unit of training part of the training program that we will offer next year. So I think that we will, in doing the work, continue to be mobilizing departments in identifying, local governments in identifying the people who will benefit, and both also in terms of the continuous servicing and follow-up. All that we can do at this stage, I mean, I don't know, Chair, that we have the capacity to go to all of the municipalities, but we can certainly through we're all trying to get that relationship with COGTA. I mean, COGTA is driving, for example, a back to basics program where they think about the differently and take on the small business opportunities as well.
Your partnership and your transaction agreement with a municipality, because that is where things are happening, should also include the role of the municipality in enhancing the training that the Department of Food and Hygiene provided to informal treaters. Like, if we take the case that of Chukuma, there is no sanitation, there are no sanitation facilities there. There is no running water, yet they are selling food. The municipality is not picking up the waste there. So, the smell is bad. Some of the people that are selling bring toddlers, and there is no facility for children to for the mother's home and change the energy. Now, if the training is only targeting the informal trainer, it is ignoring also BDG, who is saying municipalities don't take local economic development seriously. That statement sums everything up to say. Until they are made aware of the importance of LED, they will not play their role. Therefore, it is not going to help only to target the informal trader. And this, the local municipality and the district municipality, and in particular the people that are taking in the LED program, so that they can play their role. And they can also bring in the licensing department, so that they are able to address and take the role that is expected of them to be. That is what we are saying here, that your program is good, but let us broaden and look at other issues that could be of importance in terms of not only putting a burden on small business, but highlighting issues that need the involvement of other peers, in particular the local municipality peers of government. That is what we are saying. While in hand, you can train that person, but if the municipality is not providing running water, how are they going to wash them?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we of the same opinion and the same view. What comes through is the fact that we have a program that is a small program which must be expanded. Firstly, it must be expanded from the point of view of the program itself, because we've only covered just 1,000, and that's really not even a drop in the ocean. So we need to look into that program. In fact, the department started looking into that already, because as we were going around issuing the certificates and all, it became very clear that there were others who were coming in even when we were giving the certificate at the venue and saying, why not us? Why only these ones that you have at the venue? We also want the training. So we are of the view that we need to expand this program and expand it as quickly as possible. However, there must also be lessons learned
in the program that we have implemented in partnering with a retail sector. The next step is who else must then not only be coming to see us issuing the certificates, or it must be people that we start with in the process that you're talking about, that we must find a creative way of bringing those structures on board. And in fact, my view is that once we bring them in, it also then enables us to even deal with the other issues which we are talking about. So that's how I see it, and I think that's what we need to drive the department to. Then on top of that program, we are already saying, but there are other people who also need the same kind of training. What then do we do in ensuring that it doesn't end up being just an informal informal upliftment training program, but it must also look, I mean, look, if you look at spider shops, you find that our own are running spider shops, well, maybe not even the spider, let me make an example of an area that always makes me feel sad. Is if you go, for instance, to Velcom, and you go to the city center of Velcom, and you find places which I discovered is places that are owned by municipality. I didn't know that these people are having all these legal shops there, and I asked them, so why is this place not being cleaned? Then they say, yeah, but we pay rent. Others say, no, we don't pay rent. So I'm saying, who do you pay rent to? Because the person that you are paying rent to is the one that is supposed to make sure that it's clean. Then they said, actually, Minister, this building that we are occupying, they belong to the municipality. And the municipality is not coming here to assist us with the cleaning. And then we take a step to go back and say to the municipality, I was there, I'm going now with you, so that you can be, because this is my constituency. And it's not only there, even if you go here, we've been to a number of places here which we were trying to assist, it became very clear to us that while we have this program, the whole informal business and informal traders is one big space where the department has to play a role. And playing that role cannot be done alone. Hence, I fully agree with you, Chairperson, when you say we need to bring all the relevant people into that space. For me, it doesn't matter how small the problem might be. If it's small, you learn the lessons around it, then you begin to develop mechanisms of how to expand it. Also, having said that, when you deal with the informal businesses, it's not necessarily the same as dealing with your spider shops and others. There is a need for us to separate the two because they are not necessarily operating in the same space, and yet there are things in between which might be common amongst them. So what I'd like to say to you is that we hear you and we take the point. The question that was in here when Mr. Chan spoke to you, if it was Mr. Chan, oh no, it was Honorable Michel, who dealt with it. I think the inputs that we are taking here are inputs that are supposed to help us in sharpening what we already have. Lastly, Chair, I think the fact that we've had a review program, that review program needs to take into consideration all the things that are being discussed here. So that come the implementation by the beginning of the financial year, when we would have completed everything, even the lessons that we had in the past year in going to some of these places, we should be able to have a better program. The biggest challenge that I think we have been facing is one, and I agree with the chairperson when you say it's at the bottom. Our challenge is that we can't, as a department, sign transversal agreements with the municipalities. We didn't have a plan of signing those agreements with municipalities. However, we have a plan with COGDA, because we said to ourselves, COGDA is one of the factors that is very important, because when you talk about regulation and on the ground, they are the ones who have the greater, what do I call it, they are the ones who are more, who are responsible for it anyway. Even in terms of the meetings that they have, in that meeting that resolves the mayors and to COGDA, whatever they call it, yeah. But that meeting, and my view is that those are the meetings where we need to attend. Because it's at those meetings, we must push ourselves to be in those meetings, because it's at those meetings that we begin to
make sure that they understand the agenda of not just ourselves, but the agenda of small and medium enterprises and challenges that they face on the ground. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chair. The other questions, there were questions that pertain to the program review and how the program is being structured right now. And I guess the program review, one thing that will be seen, the program review will impact on the strategic plan and the APP that we are proposing for next year, as well as the program structure and the organizational structure. So one will see how we interpret that and what we will do with what is available. But as for what we are doing with regard to research right now, I think a lot of our time has also been spent on finding out what is there. I mean, one example is around the public procurement program. So I think the first responsible thing is to say, what is the available research and what has been done already? And then the process, we discover that there's an annual public sector review, public sector supply chain management review. And the 2015 such review was issued, and it reflected on the 2013-2014 financial year. And that report is able to, well, it said that government spent 500 billion in the procurement of goods, services, and construction work. It goes further to disaggregate that spending into the kinds of goods and services and in provinces, etc., etc. So, as I said, it's a very important piece of research so we don't have to redo that. We can, and it's a reliable piece of research on which we can do some sort of planning. The other, so it's about that, and the other thing that we're doing is also to work with departments that are responsible for research. So, for example, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation has a very big section on research. And they are, for example, currently, we're discussing our draft, the research agenda with them, and so that they know what we will be doing, and so that there's no duplication. So I think it's the question of how we're compensating for the gap. In fact, if we don't have a budget, I think I've tried to answer that. I think the copies on the my colleagues have responded to the Small Business Development Act. There was an incorrect statement that there are no amendments. That was the target for the quarter, and we didn't reach the target. My colleagues spoke to where we are, and I also talked about what it is that we will do that unit of work in next year, in this calendar year, and bring it to Parliament by the end of the calendar year. I think we've cut all of the one on communications. How does the department has no budget? How does it market itself? I think we've been using all the possible opportunities. We've been using programs. For example, we don't have a communications budget, but for example, the informal traders program, that design makes it possible for a graduation ceremony. So we have 8 graduation ceremonies at least, at the mine, in the country, and we will use that as a communications platform. We take up virtually every invitation that there is for us to speak and present ourselves and to really be out there.
Ms. Jefferson, can I just quickly say that we try to use whatever capacity we have around us, but we have said it's not possible for us to continue without proper funding for communication because we need to go out there. So in the, I actually asked the DC already by last year to say that the next financial year we must make sure that we are not without resources for communication because it's very difficult to work without.
So for coming financial year, I think there are 7 positions from one or none, but this is the body that we've put there, and there are 7 positions that are provided for in the next financial year. Chairperson, I don't know if I put to my notes covering everything, Chairperson.
There's 1 person asked by Honorable Mugabe.
And me also, Chairperson. You remember I asked a question about grants that are given to traders without banking accounts. Do they give them?
Yes, but we each member asks a question, I write it down. When the person is responded to, I take that. So when I was thinking about Honorable Mugabe, I was coming to your session because I have marked all the persons that have not been responded to, including Mugabe. Can you respond to this?
Chair, I gave the example of the very stringent conditions that we have set. So we have set that one, that minister, this is the one where we said it's for an informal trader to get a grant of between 500 rand to 60,000 rand. And he asked for 6 months bank accounts and a tax clearance certificate, etc., which is ridiculous. And we say, find other mechanisms. Is there a stock file account? Is there a post office account? Is that increase? So we're beginning to understand that the cost of compliance. We have not put that new grant into the area. It will become effective as from the start of the new financial year. But as it stands right now, we make all the people benefit from our grant having to jump through those hoops in terms of bank accounts. But the other question is that I've missed.
Can I also add from that? Honorable Minister, your question was more about how would you then monitor? Okay. The first part of access to finance, the first part of access to finance is what was presented. And if you are responding to the issue of access to finance, Reverend Honorable Meshwe has heard you on the access to finance, which we appreciate. But then, he is saying, if that money is given to a person who does not have a banking account, how do you then monitor how that money was used? And also, the impact made by giving that person that money in terms of now growing the business. That is what was asked. We are not questioning the actors. We appreciate the actors because that is what we have been always talking about, that they are doctors. But then, there has to be a demonstration that there will be a way in which you will see that this money was used for what it was meant for. Number 2, it has made a positive impact. That is the column in which the question is being asked. Not before the money is given, after the money has been given. How do you monitor how it was used? How do you assess the impact in terms of development of that business?
Thank you, Chair.
one of the issues that we are looking at, because this is a new program, where we're trying to make things as simple as possible, but what we want to make sure is that these important businesses, they formalize in such a way, because it doesn't help us to use taxpayer money and we can't even trace it. So the issues of bringing in self-help on board, because we know that those are communities and their level of trust in those institutions, and they will assist us in terms of ensuring that the money that is being spent is properly utilized. One of the units that we have been as part of informal business chamber support, we are looking at assisting these associations of informal businesses, these small chambers in municipalities, to be relevant and contribute to local economic development. Because for now, when municipalities are developing LED plans, they don't even participate. The only thing they do is to complain. So we want them to be capacitated in such a manner that they contribute to local economies, not just JCCI institutions that are knowledgeable and can contribute to local economies. So those are the issues that we are looking at, but we want to make sure that, for example, Post Bank, I don't want to say lower class, but it's a very accessible bank to SMEs or even to people who are based in a marginalized area. So you only find a post office everywhere. So those are the relationships that we are establishing with other government departments to make sure that we bring these people into the formal economy instead of just leaving them as informal or not in part of the economy, because we need to make sure that they contribute to these countries.
That brings us to the lead for comparative development that has been neglected. That of developing comparative banks. Because if then we again take the principle of cooperative shall cooperate, if we take the principle of cooperative shall cooperate, and then we fast track the development of cooperative banks in communities, then we would have responded to this question. Because the principle would then be making a loan or giving a loan. Would get that loan via the cooperative bank that this person is a member of. And a very high ground for development of cooperative banks are the savings clubs and communities and the self-serve. Because through that, you are then able to monitor and see how the money was utilized, because you are not going to be in each and every village, but the cooperative bank in the village becomes a structure that ensures that this money is utilized and it serves value of the borrower. They go to their cooperative bank because the norms and standards, and then it is through that you will be able to monitor, because you are not monitoring each and every individual. You are monitoring the development of the cooperative bench in the community, as well as the cooperatives that are members of that cooperative bench who are actually borrowing to develop their enterprises at community level. So the advice is that intervention will not succeed if the aspect of developing cooperative banks is lagging behind as it is right now. Because the focus in terms of cooperative banks, the role that is being played by the cooperative bank development agency, is more regulatory than developmental. That is why we don't see the establishment of the cooperative banks, because the need, the self-need of people who want to borrow are not responded to.
through the development of whole country banks, which will help us in terms of who gets the loan, how the loan gets paid back. And all that we do a capacity building process and a development, play a development role to those communities. The last question is mine. So, before mine is Munad, it's Evan.
Thank you, Chef. The center, the gist of the rationale for establishing the Centers for Entrepreneurship is to unearth the talent within a particular partnership organization that we enter into with. For instance, we're looking at the TV colleges currently, where we open the Centers for Entrepreneurship. We're training students in these centers, and I think the whole reason is to inculcate culture of entrepreneurship with the view of also, as I said, to unearth the talent that we may have among these students and for them to actually become entrepreneurs. But also, what is happening is that what is key to this program is also to look at within the environment, within the location where these partner organizations are existing, for instance, TVET colleges, and look at the competitive opportunities that we can assist with for enterprises that are existing in those areas to actually access whatever training opportunities that are available themselves within this center. So it's basically in two legs. While we're looking at the student as a focus, but it's also a focus in terms of looking within the environment that is existing in terms of what can we do. For instance, the 11 one, the competitive advantage there is that we're looking at the leather and footwear and leather. That's the sector that we are focusing on because of the activity that are existing in that area. And therefore, we try to encourage the skills looking at those opportunities that are existing in that particular area. So as in other locations as well, we look at what is the competitive advantage in that area and try to actually instill or encourage the skills in line with that. Thank you, Chair.
I may also add specifically to the one in Durban, it goes more than just the kind of partnership. It's also about the research that's being done by the institution when it comes to leather tanning and a number of areas which the university is doing on their own and they're not necessarily paying. It's that plus the, what's it called, manufacturing and textiles, yes. It's also about textiles, because I personally went to this one, and the reason why I also went was when I read what they had to offer, besides just the training, the fact that they're doing the research on areas which are also failing on our side. I mean, the size of leather, for instance, is not looking as good as it's supposed to be. They even referred us to the situation of factories that are closing down in KZN, and they could see an opportunity for contributing to what they told us about quite a number of factories that are mothballed already, and in their view they think something can be done if there can be that partnership between small and medium and our department, the Department of Trade and Industry, even the project of Black Industry. So they had quite an exciting program just on their own besides the training. Thank you, Chair.
There was a question asked by Honourable Mother on the incubator. He says, let me understand how an incubator works. Is this a person who is grounded in a program to look after other businesses to incubate in that particular program? For an incubator would be based on sector expertise and then roll around different provinces to develop small businesses. in a particular set.
From the ones that we know, they are Africa-based, but there are also those that are both physical and others are remote. For example, agriculture, it cannot be just in one area. They can incubate farmers where they are. So they train them with theory, but they also go and train them in their space where they are operating so that it can be more practical and assist them to understand their businesses better rather than bringing them into a classroom setting where you just give them theory. So they are such a base that we really know of.
Question is, can an incubator that is in Western Cape also incubate in KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, or that's the question?
Yes, no, it definitely can happen because they have the flight and offices here. Yeah.
If I may add, for instance, and the acting CEO is here, the construction incubator that has a number of offices, not in one place. I know there's one that's existing in Cape and is existing also in Northern Cape and other provinces and counties. And if you look at the French Tech, for instance, which is a furniture incubator as well, it's existing in a number of provinces. So it can be existing in a number of provinces.
Last thing, I asked a question about your approach of developing the supplier base and developing the secondary cooperative. Are you born again? Or is this by default? And if you are born again, are you targeting those areas that have been open, the markets that have been open for small, for cooperatives like the National Food Nutrition Program, for co-op, food furniture, for co-op. And if that is the case, we should then be reflecting him and thinking that for the first time in South Africa we will have a national framework for the National School Nutrition Program and how it has to develop primary cooperative food processing plants and ensure that those who are providing food in the school we no longer be called volunteer workers any 930 rand a month.
Chair, we are not born again. We did an initiative, but I think that we started.
We will need you to be born again.
Yeah. And I'm saying we just started it. I think we just piloted it. It is just in agriculture. We have just looked at it in terms of the marketing co-op. We've not, the way we approach it is not to look at expanding this land to also do bulk buying of inputs to reduce input costs. So it's not the second or fifth generation. We just started it.
Last one. I think I'm not asking you to take this if you think that it makes sense.
Okay.
The economic downturn provides this department with a golden opportunity. If you wanted to occupy a narrow strategic space, there is no opportune time as this one. And
your strategic partner that will come to you running because of the economic downturn and the following. Copper, because municipalities don't have the ready space. Salga, who has the other end, but a non-viable municipality that has got no revenue bill will lead to a situation where there will be downsizing. Downsizing in terms of one, services, what we then follow, cutting of salaries, two, reduction of staff. So make those people understand. The fact that your response is municipalities don't take LEP seriously, it means that municipalities don't understand where their revenue base comes from. Because with a slow rate payer and more indigent, the country will become a welfare state, not a developmental state. That's what you need. You need to make them understand. Correct. When they partner with you, they don't partner with this department only on the interest of this department, but they should partner with you because they see you as a very important strategic partner that is going to assist them to remain financially viable and broaden their revenue base. Another strategic partner is GAR. With those on your side, you can get everything that you want. Your point of departure will be when there are too many people who are not employed and are dependent on the state to provide them with social grants and free services. The people that are providing the social grants will jump. So they will not want to see an increasing register of the social grant. And the people that are providing free services and having no revenue base, which in this case are municipalities, will jump. So identify your strategic partner and speak to them first so that they can come on board and want to partner with you. So the issue of developing SLM is a cooperative. It's not just a binary thing. It's about the transformation of the economy and ensuring that this country realizes its objective of becoming a developmental state. Failure to develop SLM and reduce the number of people who are sitting on the indigent register and on the social grant register will render this country a welfare state. And that is the message that we need to present to your key strategic partner. The Department of Social Development is one of them. And I don't think that they will want a situation where one day they are told that there is no money to provide the child support grant. They would want a situation where people exit from the child support grant because they can afford now to feed their own children. So, these departments are your key strategic partner. Engage them first. If you think that what I am saying doesn't make sense, don't do it and save the country becoming a welfare state. We don't see what I want to say. There's no chance.
Sorry, Chair. I just want my little comment. The President made mention in his State of the Nation address last week that the government was doing its best to identify and eliminate wasteful expenditure on things like, you know, travel and other things. And the Minister will know that we're keeping an eye on this quite closely. Which then leads me to the question as to what is the purpose of there being a viable delegation from CIFRA and CEDA at this meeting at considerable cost in terms of travel, time spent out of the office. when they were not asked to present, even though they have presentations included in the packet that was sent to us. And I just would like to urge the Secretariat and whoever is organizing these meetings that people only arrive at these meetings when they're absolutely necessary to be here. Otherwise, this type of expenditure and, in my view, fruitless expenditure will not be curbed as requested by the President. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kessin. I fully agree with the fact that the President has made an announcement for cutting of costs. That's the fact. And we're doing everything we can to cut the costs and make sure that we don't spend money. And by the way, let me just make it to this meeting that our department is doing the best that it can to make sure that there's no wasteful expenditure. And it's important also for the meeting to understand that in the process of doing that, we must not then find ourselves not being able to operate, because that is also not correct. Secondly, when we have people coming here to SIFA, honorable chance, it's not always that they come here and only sit in this meeting and do nothing. My view is that it's important for them to have a proper understanding of what the portfolio committee ultimately wants. Yes, to say that they did make a presentation today is one thing, but it's important for them to be here so that they also listen, because we don't sit in the same offices. We have worked on the strategy together. We develop our plans together. But at the end of the day, SIFA also needs to go out there and implement the programs that they have. So when they are here, we don't take their being present here as just sitting on it on the benches. We take it that when they are here, it's their responsibility to also listen to the discussions and the concerns and the debates that members of the portfolio committee raises, so that at the end of the day, when they go back, they also have a full understanding of what the expectations of the portfolio committee is. And besides that, Chair, if I may add, they don't only end up here. When they leave here, we also have our own meetings. They meet with the department, with the DG, in terms of preparing and planning for this meeting. So I wouldn't want us to leave this meeting thinking that there are just people who decided to be on a joyride from Cape Town, from Johannesburg, to be here. It's important for them to be here. Thank you.
I think that SIFA and SIFA and all other entities would have been able to present if we started only with the third quarter report. We did not start with the third quarter report because we had to recap on the second quarter report. And in future, we will be dealing with the fourth quarter is hot, and SIFA and SIFA, we have to be here in court. When we started, there was no congruence between the strike plan of SIFA and SIFA and the strike plan of the department. They were going different directions. And we are at a level today where the strike plan of SIFA, SIFA and all other applications to the strike plan of the department. And I think that it is important for them to be here. Even if it is not present today, members have got the information from them. Those who want to ask questions or oral reflection, they still continue to do that. But also their presence here is important because it points to a direction where even the core location and the provision of services that have to come from those entities becomes clearer and clearer. We discuss the issue of training. And if CIDA provides the non-financial support, it's good for CIDA to be here and understand that aid. And part of the non-financial support services that are needed, this is what CIDA would need to chip in future. Because the department will not be having offices in the provinces, but in the entities that are providing
the support to the department will be having offices in local municipalities and in provinces. So I don't see it as a waste of money.